everybody. You're listening to Finding Japan, episode 13, and there's a Tokyo calling in my soup. How's it going? This is Christopher. Welcome to Finding Japan. Today's episode is a crossover episode, the first ever Finding Japan Tokyo Calling crossover. A few weeks ago, I had the opportunity to meet up with Scott Lockman from Tokyo Calling, and we proceeded to sit down to a long cup of coffee and some cake and do sort of an impromptu interview. So I think I'm just going to cut around the crap right now and just, I guess, dive right into the interview. So without any further ado, here we go with the clips. Well, in this first segment, Scott talks a little bit about his new approach to writing. And we also talked a little bit about how it was kind of strange that I had known about his writing already, and this was the first time we had actually met.
Something about, you know, the quiet time and the mind just coming alert, and that you hear it all in doing creative type work or writing. For some people, that solitude is great. Many writers say that's the best time of day.
And you've been getting into writing recently, right?
Trying to, yeah. Well, I have to teach composition.
So you're keeping a diary every day?
Yeah.
Are you writing much? Is it a couple sentences, short essays every day?
You've done your research. Yeah, that's the strange thing, you know. Like, this isn't about writing, just kind of meta talk. You know, podcasting. My sort of shtick is just, well, what is it? Stream of consciousness or just talking. Sometimes I try to plan an outline, but I put probably maybe too much of myself out there, or maybe even too transparent. I don't even know, but I kind of forget it after the fact. And then just you're asking me questions that you've gotten through listening, as I did earlier before. You know, I listened to an episode. Yeah. But isn't that a little unsettling in a way? I'm not saying, not in a bad way, because it's not a normal type of discourse with people.
Right. It's a different paradigm of communication between individuals or groups of individuals.
We've reached levels of familiarity that are sort of out of sync with the natural time,
right,
the way relationships develop. So I just sort of thrown that, like, yeah, this personal thing. Yeah, I am writing. How did you know that? Duh.
Yeah, yeah.
Told all 50 people that listened to the show. But I'm trying. The book that I'm reading, Writer Teaches Writing, says a writing teacher who's not a writer is
not a writing teacher.
Not a writing, well, he's a writing teacher, but maybe not serving the students as well as possible. As I'm a language teacher who only speaks one language, maybe I'm equally a fraud there, but I want to get it right here. I wanted to be a writer for a long time. I've kept journals, but this guy has some very practical information and steps, and one is his approach to keeping a journal or a diary. He calls it a day book, and I've got one in my bag somewhere I could dig out, but I'm writing everything in there. When I get a few moments, I write, and I'm just an infant with this now, but I'm finding that once you get going, it starts. There's a moment where things click and the words just kind of come onto the paper. And you write creatively?
I hadn't asked, you know, but I write music, and I think it's the same way.
I imagine any creative endeavor, and I've heard people who talk about this much better than I can with experience describe it, and I'm just starting to get little glimpses of that where, like, ideas come and it works, and maybe it's not so good going back the next day reading it, but still, it's a very exciting process of experiencing that. It is really, really good.
So are you developing narratives that you think might be useful for podcasting too, or are you just developing ideas that you think might in the future become something bigger than what it is right now?
Probably the most of the lead that goes on paper is just sort of like managing my work that's ahead of me. I'm trying to organize my teaching and the classes I have to do. So it's really been a great organizational type of thing, because I've got four different syllabi I'm trying to put together. I'm just making notes here, and then I can come back to it. So it's capturing thoughts that ordinarily would disappear. And I've tried journaling on the computer before, but it's too hard to go back to. That may not make sense, because you think paper is more difficult to go back to because it's analog. But somehow, rereading a text file is not not very rewarding. So there's that, but then also maybe the first story that came was a couple of weeks ago. I was sitting on a veranda at a coffee shop, and I saw a person who reminded me of a former professor, a European guy talking to a Japanese guy, and he was very loud and animated. But just because this visual image reminded me of somebody, I got a little story in my head and wrote 3 or 4 pages. It's just,
oh, that's excellent.
Just a germ of an idea, and I mean, I thought, well, I can't. And the idea would be eventually, maybe from there, I think I could write short pieces of fiction and put it out as a podcast or even publish it on the web if it's worthwhile. And then again, anybody can publish now, can't we? Mm-hmm. Text or audio or video. So that's kind of where it's going.
In this next piece, we talk a little bit about formats of podcasting and how Tokyo Calling got started. It was interesting to hear Scott speak about Tokyo Calling since I had listened pretty much since the beginning. It was interesting to hear Scott's stories about the evolution of Tokyo Calling now that he is in the 80s in terms of actual episodes.
Do you see the future of Tokyo Calling? I mean, let me back up. In my mind, I think there's maybe 3 or 4 classifications, types of audio podcasts.
Okay.
You have, I think, I'm going to take the few that I listen to. You have Hero from Japan, where Rich is traveling through life, and he's just putting stuff out there that he thinks people will be interested in. The people who are listening to that show are probably listening more about curiosity for what's life like there.
Okay.
You have shows like Joe Frank, where it's sort of like an a la carte, but it's put together and produced really well, so there's a topic for that show.
Right, right.
And you can, he may have pulled in material that was recorded over a 3-month span, and when it was finally ready, that show's done. Sort of like producing a nature documentary. And then you have shows that attempt to teach people things, where there may be sections, three sections per show, and every show it's the same 3 sections, but the content of those sections are different.
Teach it like an instructional? What do you mean teaching?
Educational,
it could be
or
news
conveying
or
information,
current events, or whatever.
Here's the week in New York. Try and think like that. Adam Curry's show even is sort of the same form. I haven't listened to it for about a year and a half yet. His show is the same form. He had plugs, he had what's going on, then he had some sort of technology hit, and then it was the same thing. He didn't really talk much about the life of Adam Curry other than, I'm going here, I'm going there. I'm flying around the world all the time. So what do you see?
So like an entertainment type of model, or entertainment or information. And then what about a music show?
Or music shows, but again, that would fall into the category of formats of podcasts that are the same. I'm going to play some music that I think is cool, and every week I'm going to play 3 songs. Well, with Tokyo,
what you're doing is like a chronicle of your experience, but also you're putting out, again, in chronicle form, your experience of going to the bank and getting money and impressions. What sort of role are you trying to...
I haven't figured it out yet. That's why I was asking you the same question, because I think there's a level of maturity that you have when you start becoming like a creative writer or someone like Joel Frank, where you find what it is that you do really well and you go for it. And I haven't found it yet. I think Tokyo Calling works pretty well because you sort of put out the combination of your thoughts, what you find interesting, and then giving people a little peek of what's going on in Japan. But I didn't know if that's been changing now that you're starting to write and think about thinking about developing content, written audio, mental.
Interesting question.
And getting it on paper now. Are you seeing patterns emerge? Are you seeing different ways of pulling things together?
I think my original idea when I got into podcasting, it was October of 2004, Adam Curry and Weiner were doing their first Daily Source morning coffee notes, or the morning coffee notes, I think, was when they would talk to each other, or whatever it was. But my idea was just to play. I had the radio background and wanted to do something with it, but to make that second model, an informative show, Tokyo Calling, information from Japan, from the perspective of an English teacher. And that's what I aspired to, but I didn't have the discipline to do research and put pieces together. and
it takes time.
Or the skill, it takes a lot of time. And it takes a script, and I have this sort of need for it to be a certain level of quality or perfection. I can never obtain that, so that was very discouraging. And I think my tendency is to get easily discouraged and to quit before having the chance to succeed. But then along the way, I started just recording on my way. I call them soundscapes, just talking with a microphone on the train or walking in the park or something. And one, that was easier to do sometimes. So there's a lot of production involved in some of them. But also, that seemed to really click with audience listeners for some reason. We got a lot of thoughtful feedback to that. Just sort of out of convenience or necessity, I made it more about me than about Tokyo life in Japan. And,
next, I asked Scott a little bit about why people listen to Tokyo Calling. In his comments, he was pretty modest, but I really think that Tokyo Calling has something different to offer. We tried to dig into that topic just a little bit, and I think we've only touched the top. I think the larger question really is, though, why do people listen to podcasts that don't have a particular theme in general, or that seem to focus on a particular person?
I think one thing, as I've said it before, is just the timing that I got in. I was in at the beginning and wound up on that first directory that Adam Curry put together, and then when iTunes went online with podcasting, it was there. I hit Tokyo Calling, interchangeable, but it was on the first level of directory there, and it was also featured on the front page a few times. And also, I think, if I do say so myself, I think it's a good name. There's a very good brand potential. I don't think that potential's ever been fulfilled as it could be, but just the name Tokyo Calling, I think if you had any interest in Japan or punk rock or The Clash or whatever, or even old telephony, you know, international long distance calls. What is it? I'll check it out. You know, Tokyo Calling. Who's not interested in Tokyo in some way? You know, it's like an enigma to
sort of like the umbrella over the city in podcasting world.
Yeah, well, not Tokyo Calling itself, but just the topic of Tokyo, I think, is interesting to many people. Just because, I don't know why, but
I think if someone just looked at the brand itself and said, what do I think that is? It could be anything, and it could encompass all of Tokyo.
Yeah, you mean the name?
Mm-hmm.
Tokyo Calling, yeah, that too. But then they come, and I don't know how many people come and never come back, or just listen for 5 minutes and internalize. The recurring theme in the comments that come back is that people are eager to hear one person telling his or her story, because it's so rare in comparison to commercial media and what's out there. And then, as you mentioned, probably the majority of the podcasts are in that second camp where they're trying to fit into a pre-existing genre or make it like a show with segments and features, which is what I tried to do as well, because we think we would like to emulate what we've heard. So maybe that's I think Rich Pav, as you say, has sort of done that even more so, which is kind of putting out there. You mentioned that you think that he is thinking about what is interesting for listeners. Maybe so, but I even get more of the sense that he's just doing whatever he wants and he doesn't really care at some point. I don't mean that in a bad way, but he's sort of, well, this is me and this is what I want to say.
The reason why I said that is because he does do some level of editing and selection. Because he'll record a podcast or something and say, I didn't like it, so I put it in the chum bucket. It's just there.
The chum bucket.
And but some of the podcasts he'll go through and he'll edit and he'll put in like a song. So there is some discretion there. But at the same time, you're right, I appreciate, I think I caught a video of him playing Frisbee with one of those kids. Just 30 seconds of Frisbee.
Yeah.
Via the mouth can. But yeah, I think...
Trademark mouth.
Yeah, trademark. I think it's an interesting... it's an interesting time to be self-publishing. I'm interested to see what people do with it.
Yeah, absolutely.
At this point, it occurred to me that one of the things we really hadn't talked about as podcasters was privacy, personal privacy. In this short segment, we both talk about our different approaches to keeping our public lives and our private lives separate or not.
Do you feel the need to keep a firewall between professional work and what you put out on the,
yeah,
the podcast?
Yeah.
And there are people I listen to who like will not say anything about what they do, or certainly
I'll say what I do, but I won't mention. I won't use people's, you know, last names.
Right.
Probably not even the first names. I'll just say the company I work for. And in fact, I don't even mention the school I go to, with the exception of Waseda, but I'm only there as an exchange student. I don't tell people what program I'm in from the U.S., partly out of respect for wanting to speak frankly about the program and not give people the wrong impression. But if people did their research and clicked through my profiles, they could figure it out.
They were that. Yeah,
it's not hard. What about yourself? You're pretty open on what you do.
Yeah, we can take this off. It's not even going. If I had it all to do over again, I would not have been so transparent with it. But I've not mentioned the kids' names. Sometimes, you know, you can hear them talking to one another and say their names. Early on, I used to say, you know, my station name where I lived, and mention names of businesses nearby. So, you know, the idea of there being, you know, a stalker or somebody with ill intentioned wanting to do damage. Like, I felt made myself hard to visible. You know, like, it would have been very easy to find exactly where I lived and stuff. But since we've moved, I think I've been better about that. The recorder's never on while I'm in the station, so like. There's that, I think, the ward that I live in. I mentioned, so we could track that down. But, you know, you can't live your life in fear. You know,
I just don't think I would be very interesting to stalk. You know?
Right, yeah, it's a lot.
I think it'd be easier to stalk other people than me.
Well, you never know. You never know what the weirdos. That's what makes them weird. But, you know, being a family man,
yeah,
kids,
that's a lot different.
So I certainly don't put their images up.
And your kids don't really have a choice, their own say right now, too.
Right, but I put their voices on.
Well, I know, but you're using your best judgment as a father and a family man to find where that line is.
Yeah.
And I think you've done a great job.
Thanks. It's also a bit of a gimmick, and some people really like it and respond whenever I get them singing. The other night, I mean, my daughter's like pretty well aware of Tokyo Call, and she's sung the theme song, made up a theme song.
Yeah.
But she's taking an English program through something called Kumon. Are you familiar with Kumon? It's like a juku for elementary school age kids, but it's not geared for getting into a program. It's just like basic skills. So she studies kanji and then also math, and she's also started taking English. So she has these little booklets, and she's also got a CD she listens to, but she reads the lines. One of the lines has, one of the stories has popularity and famous in it. So she asked me in the bath the other night, Daddy, are you famous? I said, oh, yeah, I am. About 500 people listen to the podcast. 500 people listen to you. So, yeah, I'm very famous. She said, wow, 500. So good. So, yeah, Daddy's famous.
That's cute.
Yeah, so those little things happen. It's a lot of fun.
In this next little bit, Scott and I chatted a little bit about the future of social networking from both of our perspectives. Scott asked me the question of how many people are listening to podcasts and why. And from that, we sort of took in the direction of the future of social networking and the role of podcasting in that future.
The last I heard anything of statistics, I don't remember, was a keynote that Steve Jobs gave when they introduced podcasting to iPhone. They're talking about the number of podcasts in the growth. I've pretty much ignored any statistics about that. I look at it too. It's shifting from broadcasting to clustering, and I think that I really appreciate what you do, what Terrence does, what Rich does. There's a few other people here too that I've started listening to, and to me that's an interesting group of people, an interesting group of topics, content that I'm really into. I think what people are going to find moving together is that people will start to cluster based on shared interests, mm-hmm. as opposed to shared locations. And podcasting is just one way to do that. RSS, getting your news by RSS or by topic is another way. I think maybe the same thing with video in the future. But so because of that, I think how many people are listening to podcasts or how many people are getting their news via RSS or listening to these types of podcasts is a little deceiving. I think if people can get more information on the topics that they're interested in, then mission accomplished. And I know that's happening because podcasts exist, and I haven't seen any statistics that say it's going down. So.
And I guess for it to really happen, like RSS will almost have to disappear as a term. That will be the delivery, but the users won't know how they're getting it or realizing they have to click the link to subscribe to the RSS.
And it's already happening without RSS, too. Look at MySpace. The reason why that site's so successful is because it allows people to connect regardless of where they're located. And it's more what they're interested in. You look at the groups of people on MySpace, they all share the same type of music, the same interests, the same hobbies. It's not necessarily that they all live in the same spot. And I'm sure, I don't know the K-Thai culture here well enough to know, but I'm sure with Mixi and, you know, all that stuff, it's the same. I know even the friends that I have here in Japan, I know them because of, I'm interested in photography, not because there's no other way I would have met them if it were not for a sort of social networking. So in a way, I guess what I'm getting at is podcasting to me is another form of social networking, a way to connect with people who have shared interests. I think social networking as a whole will expand, podcasting being just one of those one of the mediums by which social networking takes place.
I have to think about that. It's a medium of expression. But is the individual podcasters thinking in terms of the social network?
I think they're like a node.
Okay, they're a node.
They serve as a node. Like, people who have that shared interest can use that person as a group, or it can be spokes on the node. And it takes sort of those.
And they just naturally come together or coalesce because the technology makes it so easy and instant.
And there are people who are. What's truly interesting to me is you have people who are very inward, who wouldn't necessarily go out and seek out people with shared interests, but they'll gladly sit in the room and record something because they like to hear their own voice, and I can put it out. That's okay, that's safe. But then the interesting thing is you find these other people who are attracted to it, and suddenly those people who were very inward are now becoming very outward. And I think that is sort of the transforming power of podcast specifically, but also like RSS and self-publishing.
Well, that's what happened to me. Excuse me, mine?
No, go ahead. And same thing with me too. I would never go out and socialize with people, but I would be in a band.
Uh-huh.
Because it gave me an excuse to jump up on stage and act like a moron, which I would never want to do otherwise.
Well, that's about it for the interview. There was quite a bit more audio that I don't think was really all that useful or interesting. I've emailed Scott, and hopefully we will do this again sometime soon and plan it out a little better. I hope you enjoyed these brief little excerpts, and I just wanted to thank Scott also for taking the time out of his day. He had a really busy day that day to chat with me, and it was finally nice to meet someone that I had sort of known already. In a very strange way. But again, hope you enjoyed, and I will talk to you all later.